Six music.
BBC Radio. Six music documentaries.
Some artists are just impossible to pin down. Their refusal to follow any predictable route may often lead them out of the mainstream, but it can still lead them into fascinating directions musically. Tricky is one of those people. He's grown from being a key member of Massive Attack to establishing himself as a solo artist with the massively successful Maxine Quay, but has since pursued an intriguing and often frustratingly fleet-footed career, blurring the lines of hip-hop, jazz, rock and reggae with often startling results. He hasn't lived in the UK for 15 years and has always had a difficult relationship with fame. He's also gathered a reputation for being withdrawn, difficult, even paranoid. I found him to be utterly delightful. I met him in Paris, where he now lives, and started off the interview, as I always do, by asking when he was first aware of music as a young child.
Hearing it in the house when I was a kid, Billie Holiday, my grandmother playing it. But I was young, I didn't really obviously know about music. But my first voice I ever heard musically, I think, was Billie Holiday.
Can you remember the tracks?
No. I can remember... I seem to remember that... what's it called? About the hanging, lynching.
Strange Fruit.
Strange Fruit. For some reason. But I don't know if that's me wanting to remember that. But that's the first voice I heard. Yeah, it was Billie Holiday.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
Did music always mean a lot to you?
Not until I got into reggae music, you know, dancehall. Because it's, you know, I started going out to, like, places when I was 14, you know, and everything, all music was on cassette, you know, and the reggae community was not about buying records. So a cassette could come from Jamaica to Birmingham, to Manchester, to Bristol, to London, and that tape would circulate, and it was sound systems. So then when I was about 14, I started going to sound systems and stuff. And I think that's when music kind of started. Well, it didn't mean a lot to me, but, you know, I was living around music then.
So what about the first piece of music you owned? Do you remember buying your first single or buying your first record?
It was, I think it was Too Much Too Young.
Specials.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it about the Specials that appealed to you? I mean, they had a very strong image and they stood for something. Was that it?
I think it's the first time I could relate. It was like I could totally understand what they were talking about, you know? Like, it was just normal stuff. Normal, you know, like, it's street music, you know? So I could totally kind of understand their way of living, you know? Because I was living like that, you know? It's like, I can imagine going to the same sort of clubs as those guys. And so it was kind of like, it was music for council flat kids, I thought. You know, and that's what it felt like. So I think that's why I related to it.
Too much too young. You done too much, much too young. You're married with a kid when you could be having fun with me.
Did you kind of think, I want to be doing that at that point?
Well, it kind of made me feel like I could do it because they were normal guys. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you can love Billie Holiday, but I'm not going to go into a music career because of Billie Holiday, because there's no way I can do that. But with the Specials, they made me feel like, they're guys like me. You know, I can do this.
Tell me more about these compilation tapes. What kind of tracks were getting passed around?
Oh, it was sound systems. Like, so you'd have a sound system in Jamaica or London or Birmingham or Bristol, and it was kind of like Jad Tubbies, all these Saxon, all these underground bands, but a cassette would go around. And basically the most popular sound systems were the cassettes what went round. So it was like, and then they would get little tours off of it, but there was no money in it, you know? And you had people like Daddy Rusty and, God, I can't remember after names now, but Daddy Rusty, Jack Tubbies, Saxon. And these tapes just used to communicate all through the Jamaican community.
When did you start writing songs? Were you kind of into kind of making your own music or writing lyrics and stuff when you were pretty young?
I used to write words when I was young, but not only like, you know, like kids would draw, you know? Like some kids would draw, I used to write words, you know? I wasn't really a drawer, so I used to write words, but not really. It wasn't like, I wasn't really, when I was young, I was just having fun with my friends. I mean, I wasn't really serious about anything, to be honest.
What was the first gig you went to, if you remember?
Public Enemy. Was I think it was the Hammersmith. It was with my cousin Sean from London, and another friend called Whitley, and that was the first concert.
What was that like?
Oh, it was wicked, because you know Public Enemy were like a big influence on me, and then to get to see them, you know. And I wasn't really into concerts, you know what I mean? It's like I come from the sound system and then the DJ things. So going to see live bands wasn't really ever my thing. It's still not my thing, to be honest with you. You know, I'd rather go to listen to music in a club than see a live band. So that's the first time I actually made an effort to go and see someone.
What's the big standout track for you? What's the Public Enemy track that really made an impact on you?
What's it called? The first track I heard was, Bring the Noise.
That's a massive tune.
Yeah, it changed the face of music, you know? It changed the face of the all of music. I think Public Enemy are totally underrated, you know what I mean? It's like how some people look at Jimi Hendrix, they should be looking at Public Enemy. You know, I think Public Enemy are more advanced than Jimi Hendrix, to be honest with you. It's new music, do you know what I mean? So I think they're totally underrated band.
Too black, too strong. Too black, too strong.
Yo, Chuck, these dirty drippers are still front on us. Show them that we can do this, cause we always do this.
How low can you go? Death row? What a brother, no. Once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the uncannibal thief. Public Enemy number one. 5-4 said freeze, and I got numb. Can I tell them that I really never had a gun? But it's the wax that the Terminator X-bun. Now they got me in the cell, cause my records they sell. Cause a brother like me said, well, Farrakhan's a prophet, and I think you wanna listen to what he can say to you. What you oughta do is follow for now. How are the people say, make a miracle, keep up the lyrical. Black is back, all in, we're gonna win, check it out.
Yo, come on.
Here we go again. Bring the noise.
Hey, yo, Chuck, they say we too black, man.
Bring the noise.
Yeah, I don't understand what they say, but little do they know they can get a smack for that, man.
Never batter than bad, cause a brother is madder than mad at the fact that's corrupt like a senator. Soul on the road, but you treat it like soap on a rope, cause the beats and the lines are so dope. Listen for lessons I'm saying inside music that the critics are blasting me for. They'll never care for the brothers and sisters. Why, cause the country has us up for the war. We got to get them straight. Come on now, they're going to have to wait. Till we get it right. Radio stations are questioning blackness. They call us a black, but we'll see if the greatest. Bring the noise. My DJ is warm, he's ex, I call him Norm, you know. He can cut a record from side to side. So what the ride, the glide, what should be safer than a suicide? Soul control beat is the father of your rock and roll. Music for watching, for witching. You call a band, man, making a music of music. But you can't do it, you know, you call them demos.
But we ride demos too.
What you gonna do? Rap is not afraid of you. Beat is for Sonny Bono.
Beat is for Yoko Ono.
Run the MC first, and the DJ could be a band standing its own feet. Get you out your seat. Beat is for Eric B and LL as well, hell.
Watch is for Anthrax.
Can rock bell, ever forever, universal it will sell. Time for me to exit. Terminator exit. Bring the noise.
Yo, they should know by now that they can't stop this bummer.
So you stop being like a comatose. Stand my man, the beats the same with a bolster. Rock with some pizzazz, it will last. Why you ask? Roll with the rock stars,
they'll never get accepted as.
We got the plead, the fifth, you can investigate. No need to wait, get the record straight. Hey, posse in effect, got flavor. Terminator, exercise checks, play to get paid. You got the check it out down on the avenue. A magazine or two is dissing me and dissing you. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Hey, yo, Griff, get the S1W. We got to handle this. We ain't going out like that. Yo, man, straight up on a Columbo tip. We can do this like Brutus, cause we always knew this. You know what I'm saying? There's just one thing that puzzles me, my brother. What's wrong with all these people around here, man? Is that clocking?
You mentioned DJing. What was the first club gig you DJed at or went to?
What's the first club? It's blues, little blues. We call them blues. It's like illegal parties, Jamaican parties. So it's in a house, but they set up a bar and they cook food. They used to call them shabines, but then in my day they were called blues. And so there's a bar in a house, and they have a DJ in there with reggae, and you can buy food, you can buy some weed, you can buy drink, and they call it shabines blues. Because these were all night things as well. So they never had no license. So they went on all night.
What kind of stuff would they play?
Oh, just all reggae. All reggae. Nothing else but reggae music.
I could ask you, at 17 you spent some time in prison.
Mm.
What was that first... I mean, what happened? What was the first night in prison like? Because that must have been 17. You're young, man.
Depressing. Really depressing. Like, it was... It's boredom is the thing as well. It's boredom is the... Because you're locked up 23 hours out of 24 and then you get association every other day. I was in youth custody. And what they do is, it's all about the mind, you know what I mean? So you're youth custody, but they take you through the main prison. So you're going through and you're with the... It's like, you know, the big boys, you know what I mean? And you're a kid, really, 17... So they walk you through that. And it's almost like to mess with your head. You know, like things like ironing your shirts, or you have to roll your collars up on your sleeves. So, because people were having razor blades. And so it's all mind games. But it's the thing, what really gets you is the boredom. It's so boring. You know, you're in a cell for 23 hours of the day. It's just very tedious. So it's the time, it's actually the time. It's very boring, and I didn't spend a long time in there. But it's just boring, really. It's just, and food, but everything is bad. It's designed to be, you know, for when you leave the court and they put you in the van and you're chained to someone else next to you in a little cubicle. There's people you see in there. So you see some people who aren't meant to be there, and it makes you real sad. And some people who've made mistakes, but it's just a mistake, and they're not criminals. You know, they've made one mistake, and it's people like your uncle or your nephew or, you know, good people. And you've seen they've made one mistake, and they're in there. So it's pretty, very depressing place, very.
What was your mistake? What were you doing?
Forgery of the crown. So it wasn't really a mistake. It was, I knew what I was doing. Do you know what I mean? So that wasn't really a mistake. But you know, when you're young, you want... See, what? It's like when I lived in my area, I was all right until I ventured out. When I ventured out and I started going to clubs and I ventured out of my area, I became corrupted, because you see people with nice things. You know what I mean? And when you're stuck in your area, you're not aware of it. But when you're old enough to go out, you see people with the best trainers or the best watches or the best da da da, and then you start going to clubs and you need money. So, and getting a job sometimes is a hard factor where I come from. So you get corrupted, I suppose. You know, you want the nice clothes, you want to live in the nice area, and so you go out to get money. So we did things to try and get money, you know.
So when did you first start making music for yourself then?
When
what's the first recording?
It's called Nothing's Clear. It was for a compilation album for Sickle Cell. And it was released, it was done by a Bristol guy. And that's the first thing I ever, or was it? Yeah, that's the first thing I ever recorded by myself, yeah.
Tell me about what it was like in Bristol at that time, because people obviously talk about the Wild Bunch, and when did you first kind of get associated with... Because it seems, for people that work there, it seems like this kind of group of DJs, graffiti artists and rappers, seems like a really creative environment for a few years. Was that what it was like?
I think it's because it's so boring down there that people, you know, you do go into music, you either get a job or you... Because it's quite a boring place, do you know what I mean? And if you don't make something happen for yourself, it's going to be boring. So I think in those days, everybody, you know, was DJing, setting up sound systems. It's like, from the sound system, you know, you can really figure out, like, the Wild Bunch is like a sound system, but it was hip-hop. So it's almost like reggae evolving, do you know what I mean? Even though through hip-hop, because when I was younger, I used to go to sound systems of reggae. Then as time went on, I started going to sound systems of hip-hop, and that's when I become a rapper after hearing people like Slick Rick and Rakim. So Wild Bunch was a sound system, and I think it's, you set up your own parties, because it is quite it can be quite a boring place, and it's not a massive place, you know. You know, it's a small city, so everybody knows everybody. So I think there's always a lot of stuff going on music there, because you're forced to make something happen if you live there, because otherwise, you know, you've got the kind of discotheques there, which are really not that good. You know, the commercial clubs. So you have to kind of do your own thing, you know. But in Bristol, you could go to a pub, just like a normal pub in here, the best reggae music you've ever heard, just in a little pub. It's very big Jamaican influence there.
You mentioned Rakim. Was he someone that made a big impact on you?
Oh, well, he changed, like, Public Enemy changed the face of hip-hop. Rakim changed the face of rap. You know, rappers were rapping a certain way. He brought in new school rap. You know, rappers were kind of to the barb, to the dad. It's very old school. And then when Rakim came in, he changed that. He brought us into the new century of rap. So he's one of my biggest influences. And, you know, it's like he was recognized as in the New York Times called him the laureate of rap, the King's Poet. You know, and for a rapper to be called that from the New York Times is, you know, he's a poet. He's a poet. His lyrics are just ridiculous, absolutely out of this world, his earlier stuff.
You better avoid. Poets are paranoid, DJs destroyed. Guess I came back to attack, brothers are spiked. It's like lightning, it's quite frightening. But don't be afraid in the dark, in a bark. Not a scream or a cry or a bark, more like a spark. You tremble like an alcoholic, muscles tighten up. What's that like? No, you see a sight, but suddenly you feel like you're in a horror flick. You grab your heart and wish for tomorrow quick. Music's a clue when I come, you're warned. Apocalypse now, when I'm done, you're gone. Haven't you ever heard of an MC murderer? Death penalty, and I'm serving a death wish. So come on, step to this hysterical idea for a lyrical professionist. Friday the 13th, walking down Elm Street. You come in my realm, you get beat. This is off limits, so your bridges are blurry. All you see is the meters of the volume pumping lyrics of fury. Never error files. They read I'm known to exile. For those that oppose to be level or next to this, I ain't a devil and this ain't the exorcist. It's worse than a nightmare. You don't have to sleep or wink. The pains of my brain every time you think. Flashbacks interfere, you start to hear the R-A-K-I-M in your ear. Then the beat's hysterical, that makes Eric go get an ad. Time to whack, soon the lyrical format is fury. Your faces of death are made. MC's decaying, but they never stayed. Crime every night at the show. The fiend of a rhyme on the mic that you know. It's only one capable breaks the unbreakable melodies, unmakeable pattern, unescapable. I horn if you want the style I possess. I bless the child, the earth, the gods, and bomb the rest. For those that envy an MC, it can be hazardous to your health, so be friendly. A matter of life and death, just like an etch. Just get shaky, you're clear, make it disappear. Make the next after the ceremony, let the rhyme rest in peace. If not, my soul will release. The scene is recreated, reincarnated, updated. I'm glad you made it, cause you're about to see a disastrous sight. A performance never again performed on a mic. Lyrics of fury.
Who was the first person to call you Tricky?
my friend in I think it was DJ Crust, the drum and bass DJ, because I was supposed to meet him, and I went off to Manchester, and I come back about 6 weeks later, and he was happened to be where I was meeting him, and I got out of the car, and he called me a tricky so-and-so. So I think that's where I got it from, I think. But I had it in school, you know.
Tell me about Massive Attack. What was that first record like to record?
Oh, it's fun, you know, and it was different because I, you know, it was a new thing for me. You know, when you're listening to music when you're young, you never think you can do it, you know, you never think, you know, there is a process of getting that, you know, you've got a record. You never think, well, you could go into a studio, you can record it, they press it. It just seems impossible. You don't seem to know how that, you know. So going in, it was like, it's quite surreal to think, you know, oh, I'm involved in making a record here. So it's quite a surreal experience.
Was it a happy record to make?
Yeah, it's. I don't think happy is the way of explaining it. It's like, I think when you come from the hip-hop world is a competitive world. So I think it's like, say, you want to be the best rapper in England, or you want to be the best rapper in the world. You want to come with the best stuff. So I think it wasn't that happy feeling. It's more like, say, me and 3D, for instance, it's all about competition. So me and him wanted to be the best rappers we could possibly be. So one happy, it was about trying to be the best, because it's like rap was a competitive. So I think it was more like, yeah, we want to be the best, you know.
You sure you wanna be with me? I've nothing to give. Don't lie and say this love is best. Don't leave us in emotional pace. Take a walk, taste a rest. No, take a rest. I seen you digging a hole in your neighborhood. You're crazy, but you're lazy. No need to live in a lean-to. Your troubles must be seen to. See through money like it's paper. With faces I remember. I drink on a daily basis. The way soda cools my temper. It never cools my temper. Walking through the suburbs, they're not exactly lovers, you're a couple. Especially when your bodies double duplicate, and then you wait for the next Kuwait. Karma coma, Jamaica and Roma. 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 To get, now take a walk, take a rest, taste the rest. You sure you wanna be with me? I'm nothing to get, now take a walk. Overcoming 60 seconds with the strength we have together, but for now, emotional ties, they stay severed. When there's trust to be treated, someone with funk will hear beats. Karma coma, Jamaica and Roma. Karma coma, Jamaica and Roma. Karma coma, Jamaica and Roma. Karma coma, Jamaica and Roma.
That's Massive Attack's Karma Coma, featuring Tricky.
Six. BBC Six Music. Six Music.
I'm said they were suckers. They wanted me for the army or whatever. Picture me giving a damn, I said never. Here is a land that never gave a damn about a brother like myself, cause I never did. I wasn't with her for just that very minute. It occurred to me that suckers had authority. Cold sweating as I dwell in my cell. How long has it been? They got me sitting in a state pen. I gotta get up, but the thought was told before. I contemplated a plan on a cell floor. I'm not a fugitive on the run, but a brother like me began to be another one. Public enemy serving time. They do the law on you. They criticize you for some time.
I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time with Tricky. You just heard his cover of Public Enemy's Black Steel from the debut album Max and Quay. I asked him what prompted him to first begin a solo career after his involvement with Massive Attack.
It was my cousin Misha. I did a song, Aftermath, and I had it for about 3 years. And every now and again, I used to play it to her, and she used to say, you know, you need to release this. You need to get this out.
So it's like 94, 95, something like that?
Before 94. Because my album came out in 94, and that was years before. I had Aftermath like 3-4 years before, but you know, I didn't really, you know, I was quite laid back when I was younger, so I had it for years. And then after about 3 years, I took it to I think it was D and G, and I played it, and I said, you want it? And they said, nah, we ain't into it. So then I done a white label with this guy in Bristol, 500 copies, and then sent it to DJs around England, mostly London. And then 6 weeks later, Chris Blackwell signed me. So it was all very, very fast.
And then that record went through the roof.
Yeah, very, very, it's quite heavy, you know what I mean? It's quite heavy. It's like losing your anonymity is hardcore, you know what I mean? When you know, you're walking somewhere and people are staring at you, or you hear someone whisper, oh, that's tricky, yeah. You know, it takes time to get used to, you know, and you have to learn how to deal with it.
Because some people love it. Some people love the attention. That's one of the reasons they kind of release records, is to get acclaim. And that wasn't the case with you.
No, it's like I've got a very English attitude, I think. I'm very English. Do you know, like, someone staring at you is aggressive. For an English guy, that's aggressive. You know what I mean? So it's like, I can remember being on a bus with my friend once in Bristol, and there's this guy kept staring. I said to my friend, "Why is this guy keep staring at me for? What's wrong with him?" He just keeps staring and staring and staring. And my friend goes, "You gotta understand, you're famous now. He's looking at you because he probably recognizes you." So it's it takes a long time for your to kind of, because it's not very normal, is it? You know, so how do you get used to something that's not normal? You know, it's not really reality. So it's kind of like you're not. It's not like living in the present, and it changes the way you walk. You know, if you're walking and you hear someone whisper, "Oh, that's tricky," and you can feel them staring at you from behind, that affects your whole being, you know? So the way you walk, the way you talk. So it's a constant struggle trying to be yourself, you know, and remembering who you are before the success, before people treating you good and da-da-da. You have to really keep your feet on the ground.
Did you get a bit angry? Did you get a bit... sort of, I don't know, angsty, a bit stressy, a bit. You change a lot, do you think?
Yeah, totally. I got very angry. You know what I mean? It affected me totally. Like, where I'd have problems in with my brothers and my family. We'd be out somewhere, we'd have a problem. You know what I mean? It'd get aggressive. You know what I mean? It was like it was very particular time. It was very particular. Do you know what I mean? And then, because of touring, I found alcohol. You know, I used to drink when I was a kid every now and again. But then, when you're touring, when you got 8 hours a kill not to do anything, so you drink or you da 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 da. Now I'm older. I've learned. Now, for instance, I have part of my rider is having a coach, whether it's a boxing or Muay Thai coach, to kill the time. But when you're younger, you don't think, you know? So you start drinking more, you start smoking more, you start partying more. So your body becomes unbalanced with the stress. And then you just, you know, sometimes, and it affected me with health, you know? It affected everything. And it took me a long time. Now I go away, I've got a coach, I train. It's easier. But, It can be difficult, especially if you've got no discipline.
There's something uncontrollable. You sit there watching the door. Color me. Color me. Color me. Already feeling tied to your bedside. Slap your thigh. Slap your cough, sing your mantra, leave your walk. Color me, color me. Something fits along my spine. Just give me love from behind. Fortify my arms. Fortify my arms. Cut me. Cut me.
Your second solo record opens with Susan Vanshee's cover. So we talked a lot about Public Enemy and Rakim. That's a completely different influence. Where's that come from?
kind of the punk pop, you know. I was like Susie and the Banshees, Blondie, do you know what I mean? And you know, like Robert Smith was in Susie and the Banshees, and then I liked The Cure, you know. So I think that comes from just good English pop music. That's when pop music, the name wasn't so dirty, you know. You had all these bands, Blonde, you know, they was good pop music. So I was lucky enough to grow up through the times of Susie and the Banshees, Mark Boland. Even though I was young with Mark Boland, it still affected me because it was on English radio, you know. So I was lucky enough to see the really great time for English pop music.
What was the Boland track that you loved?
Cosmic Dancer. Yeah, that's I think it's like he's talking about his own death right there, almost like you know, it's kind of crazy. It's like he's penned his future right there.
I was dancing when I was 12. I was dancing when I was 12. I was dancing when I was out. I was dancing when I was out. I danced myself right out the womb. Dance myself right out the womb. Is it strange to dance so soon? I dance myself right out the womb. I was dancing when I was 8. I was dancing when I was 8. Strength to dance so late. Is it strength to dance so late? Oh, oh, oh. I dance myself into the tomb. I dance myself into the tomb. Strange to dance so soon. I dance myself into the...
There's kind of like the theatricality that he's got. You've got a bit of that as well. It's not just all the dark stuff. There's, you know, your artwork and photos. There's a certain glamour to it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I think, you know, as an artist, if I just portray me, just me, I think that's going to be boring. And it's, you've got to have something to hide behind, you know? And I'm not going to hide behind a persona, like become a
character.
Character. But I think you know, you need a vibe. So I do that with photographs or with makeup or videos. So I think for me, I do what I want in my music, in my visuals. But in my real life, I try and stay grounded and not become a character or a pop star. You know, I was called Tricky before the music. People call me Tricky now. And then my grandmother calls me Adrian. You know what I mean? And then there's my art. And it's two separate things. So it's good to keep them separate as well, you know? So, and with pictures and videos, I get to express myself, you know?
When do you start acting? Because you've cropped up in stuff.
Yeah, I don't... It's very hard work. I got a lot of respect for actors since I've done it. It's like I've done... 2, maybe 3 films, and all of them is very difficult, all very tiring.
Was The Fifth Element the first one?
Yeah, being around Gary Oldman was incredible though, because he's, you know what I mean, so to get to hang out with Gary Oldman, who was one of my heroes, you know, that is incredible. But it was hard work, and it's very different to music. I have to learn lines, and I have to act when someone tells me to do something. There's not as much freedom as in music. So, and the timing, the schedule, it's like working, it's like work, and it's hard work. So I got a lot of respect for actors. And I did one with one called Clean with a French guy called Olivier. And that was more easy, you know, that's more, it's an independent film. So I don't think I would do it again unless it was a good indie film where I had a little bit of freedom.
When did you decide to move to Paris?
I'd been here for about a year. And it was just basically because of my family. I mean, it's like I've been living in New York for 10 years and then LA for 6 years. I've been out of the country for a long time.
Why is that?
I love New York hip hop. I moved to New York because of hip hop. You know what I mean? It was like, if you were into hip hop, you had to go and live in New York, you know? And then I ended up in LA because of 9/11. I got stuck there and never went and just never went back. I was in LA working and I got stuck in LA for 3 months after 9/11. I was in a hotel, ended up being in a hotel for 5 months, and my manager's like, it's too expensive. Rent an apartment until you come back.
Just stay.
I just never went back. So I've been out of the country 16 years, 15, 16 years. So the family, it's easier to see my family now, you know, I could get on the train and stuff. So it's basically just being closer to my family.
What was your New York soundtrack when you were there?
Well, really, in New York, everything is... Well, I was living, everything was about hip-hop and reggae. So it's like just all the hip-hop, all the new hip-hop.
Like who was around at the time that you were listening to, like, if you remember?
Ah, Capone and Noriega. I still listen to them, you know what I mean? Like Wu-Tang and, you know what I mean? It's like I got to New York just before hip-hop started making huge amounts of money. Just a few years before. So, you know, I used to go to a hip-hop club like the Tea Room, and you'd see rappers there like whoever, like Jay-Z, blah, 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 blah. But they weren't huge stars then, do you know what I mean? It was a little vibe. So there's all these different clubs, and so it was all hip-hop and reggae. And then I had friends in the Bronx who had a sound system, a reggae sound system. So it was like hip-hop, reggae, that was it.
What about LA when you went to LA? It's a whole different atmosphere, a whole different musical scene.
It's still hip-hop.
Still hip-hop, just yeah. A different kind of hip-hop.
More the commercial, the big money makers, you know. So in a club, you're hearing some of the more commercial stuff like Eminem come on in the clubs, you know what I mean? But it was still hip-hop, but some of it more commercial.
And how about Paris?
Paris,
it's always been a very vibrant music scene in Paris, very diverse, lots of different influences coming
through.
Well,
with Paris, you kind of, say with New York, London, LA, you kind of, you know, you're going to a certain place. In Paris, you can walk out of your hotel or your apartment, you just walk, you see a bar you like, and you stay. So with Paris, there ain't no really certain thing. It's like, there's an incredible reggae club in Bagnolet, in the 20th district, but it's a bar, but it's incredible ragga, hardcore ragga music. And you know, so, but I don't really, you kind of don't have to choose somewhere. You could go to many different vibes, you go to African clubs, you go to hip hop, you go, so it's kind of more walking somewhere, you see something you like and you think, oh, I'm gonna stay and have a drink here. So it's a bit more casual here.
Do you think that's affected this new record, X-Rays?
No, I just think 6 years in LA, it was you're totally out of it. You know what I mean? It's like living in Japan. It's far away. You know what I mean? You're totally out of the
rest of the world.
The rest of the world, you know. And with LA, you've got everything there. You don't need. I've never traveled less than when I'm living in LA, and because it's so far, 10 hours on the plane, you just don't go anywhere, and it's sunny all the time. Why would you go on holiday? You know. So I think moving out of LA, I think it's been about, I don't know how many years now. But moving out of LA, I think, is one of the factors where I'm working again. You know, it was almost like I was retired there.
It was just too easy.
Yeah, everything is there. You know, so now I'm out. I just think, you know, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to be doing again, you know?
Shine your gun. It's time for the showdown. fingerprints on the murder weapon. One of them come, I'm gonna kill them dead. Two of them come, I'm gonna run them red. Without a trace, I'll send them to their beds. And another one dead. Shine your gun, shine your gun, shine your gun, rude boy. Shine your gun, shine your gun, shine your gun right now. Watch, I got my Glock on my waist. Watch, I got my Glock on my waist. You want to get acquainted to Betsy, or you want to meet my Glock Charlie? Shine your gun, shine your gun, shine your gun right now. Shine your gun, shine your gun. It's time for the showdown.
You got the Glock, you got the war. You can't mock, you in the spot.
New record, there's Murder Weapon, which is a cover. When did you first hear that?
That was a big song back in the reggae community. Very big song, you know what I mean? Very big song.
And by
Sugar Minor. Yeah, very big, big song. That was huge, but not underground song, you know what I mean? It's underground. You know what I mean? Unless you were into reggae from way back, you might not know about that. Do you know what I mean? So that was...
What is it about that song that made you think I can cover this?
Well, I couldn't cover it because it would be negative, because the lyrics are very dark. If you hear the original version, it's dark. It's a gunman lyric, you know what I mean? So to have a girl do it, it takes away the... It makes it more like a movie. And then with the video, it makes it more into a movie. It's to me, it's like when I did Public Enemy...
Black Steel, yeah.
Black Steel with Martina. It's taken a song which is definitely, you can totally hear it's not written by a woman. It's a man's lyrics. But then to have a woman do it, to swap it around, you know, swap it around. So to put those lyrics in a girl's mouth, it kind of changes it.
So what else is next? And you say you've got this EP coming out, you've got the tour coming up. There's been talk you're going to work with Massive Attack again. Is this true?
Well, he asked me, and I said, yeah, but then I haven't heard anything. You know what I mean? I'm the sort of person, if you're going to do something, let's do it. You know what I mean? So we met months ago, and it was cool seeing him. You know what I mean? Well, I only seen D, and it was cool seeing him. You know what I mean? It was a good vibe. He said, look, you know, we should work. And I said, yeah. But it's a long time, and I get bored of things very quickly. So now I'm into it, but once I start touring and stuff and doing, you know, I'm already thinking about my next record. I'm promoting this Mixed Race, you know what I mean? But I'm already kind of started. Yeah, I've already started. I've got stuff, you know? So I'm kind of on that already. So, you know, time passes and then people go their separate ways again.
But the door's not shut.
No, the door's not shut. But if it goes on any longer, they're going to be busy. I'm going to be busy and it's going to be hard for us. You know, they're a busy band, you know what I mean? They're big. They're a lot bigger artists than me. They sell a lot more records than me. So they're even busier than me. And I'm busy. So I can't imagine what it's like for them. So I think the best thing would be to start, you know, if you've talked about it, start doing it now. Start preparing. Or even if you go in the studio once, twice, let's just get on with it kind of thing.
And finally, we always ask everyone to pick the last track at the end of the show. We've gone through, we've heard a load of great songs. We can play anything you want. It could be something by you. It could be something from someone that you've loved in your life. It could be someone that influenced you from your childhood. It could be anything you want. What should we go out on? What's the last track going to be?
This is Frankie Riley, and it's called I Sing for the Joker. And this is one of the songs we'll be doing on tour. So this is Frankie Riley, who's on my album, Mixed Race, I Sing for the Joker.
BBC Radio 6 Music.